Hello, and thank you for listening to True Crime Cam. I have several Let's Not Meet stories for y'all this week. Not gonna lie, the last one almost made me cry. And speaking of crying, when I was putting on my eyeliner this morning, my left eye started to feel uncomfortable. Upon closer inspection, if you're eating right now, by the way, skip ahead like 20 seconds. So I look into the corner of my eye and I see an eyelash sticking straight up. I thought it was just an eyelash that went rogue, but no, it was lodged into my tear duct. If I saw this on another person, I would faint, but because it was my own body, somehow I managed to stay calm, get some tweezers, and perform a little surgery and yank it out. It was so disgusting. The relief was amazing, but it was so disgusting. There was like goop attached to the end. It was so gross. I'm so sorry. Just wanted to set up a disturbing mood for you all for this episode. Anyways, let's get into it. Here we go. A true, very creepy surveillance story. I posted this on r/nosleep, and they loved it and said to post it here. Here you go. So first of all, I only just discovered this subreddit today, which reminded me of something that happened to me in 2008. This was a huge thing to my friends and family, and I didn't really talk about it back then as it scared the fuck out of me. But it was a while ago and is a really well-known, creepy story among myself and my friends and family. But I think I may as well share it, as it is admittedly terrifying. I was living with my parents and sister in Brisbane, Australia at the time, 2008, which means I was 19. I remember my dad had just got Foxtel, cable TV in Australia. But only the TV in the lounge room could use the cable box, and I really wanted to somehow get the cable in my room without paying $99 or whatever for a new box. So one day my dad went out and bought an AV transmitter/receiver. It was basically a two-piece bit of hardware where you would plug this tiny box into the cable TV in the lounge room, and it would transmit a video signal to the receiver, connected to the TV in my room. So one Saturday, I decided to connect it. This is a picture I took of the setup when I was telling a friend the story. Okay, so that's their little setup with the receiver plugged into their monitor, and it's on a dresser. My younger sister, 16, was the only other person home at the time, upstairs in her room. My room was downstairs. I opened the box and connected it up. At first, I was going back and forth, trying to get the cables right, trying to get the channel right, etc., but no luck. Until I finally got something. I remember just sitting there and something started fuzzing in. This is where things start to feel like a horror movie. I remember thinking, oh, here we go, and waiting to see the picture come in clearly. As it started fuzzing in, I remembered that this whole time the cable set top box wasn't even on, and that's why it wasn't working this whole time. But then why was I getting a signal? It seemed to all hit me at once. As I realized the box was off, the picture fuzzed in and I saw my bed. Okay, OP took another picture of that. That is incredibly creepy. Holy cow. I freaked the fuck out. As at first I thought it was my bed. I had recently seen Saw 2 and remembered that scene where she turns on the TV and it's a camera filming her in her apartment. That was the first thing I thought of. I sprinted upstairs to my sister, absolutely terrified. I told her to come down and take a look. She came down and we both realized it wasn't my bed. We didn't know whose bed it was or how I was getting the signal. Obviously, it was the AV receiver picking up a camera signal, but we were just so confused as to who/what it was for. Eventually, my parents came home, and we concluded that it would have to be a neighbor or someone living close by for us to be receiving the signal. We waited until around 6 p.m., and then someone came into the room. Okay, OP has another picture. That is really creepy. Holy cow. So it's the same image, basically, a little less fuzzy, and someone's coming into the room. My dad recognized it as one of our neighbors. We still didn't know what the camera was for, but we assumed it had something to do with fidelity. Either his wife or he had set it up to watch the other and see if they were cheating. Either this, or it was to tape themselves having sex. We entertained the idea that he was a murderer and would film himself murdering people in his room, but just to freak each other out. We'd always make jokes about how one night we'll turn it on, and it'll just be his face with clown makeup on, staring at the camera waving, and then him walking out of the bedroom with a knife. This never happened. But what did happen was still super creepy. We connected to this signal for over a week, but after a few days, the novelty kind of wore off. We felt a bit weird watching it, and just resigned to the explanation that it was to catch his cheating wife. Until one day, we turned it on, and realized what we had discovered. Our neighbors were having a bunch of renovations done to their house. During weekdays, they would be out, and there would be workers at the place pretty much all day. It had been like this for over a month. We started watching the feed and saw a man walk into their room. It was the plumber that had been there regularly for the renovations. We didn't think anything of it until he started opening drawers. I called out to my mom, the only person home at the time, and we started watching it. He started getting the wife's underpants and sniffing them, doing all that creepy shit. At first, we were like, oh my god, how embarrassing, he's being filmed. Will the neighbors see this somehow? But then what happened next was truly terrifying. He slowly walked over to the camera and looked right down the fucking lens. We were convinced that he knew we were watching. My mom immediately called my dad. I kept watching. He started fiddling with it and then put it back down. I told my mom that I don't think he knew we were watching, but he's definitely the guy that put the camera there. Dad came home, and by this time, the plumber had left. Much to mom's pleading, Dad went over to the neighbors to tell them what we saw. My mom wanted to completely stay out of it and was terrified, understandably. When we told the neighbors, they had no idea what we were talking about. They allowed my dad to go up to the room and found what was holding the camera. It was a device installed into the wall that was designed to monitor water usage, which was completely normal at the time, as Brisbane had been hit with droughts recently and there were lots of water restrictions. The plumber had installed this into the wall, but had fitted a camera behind it into the wall to watch the bed. Immediately, they called the police, who came over and conducted an investigation. For the next week or so, we didn't hear much about it. I spent most of this time just telling my friends, showing them pictures, but truthfully, my whole family was scared every night. It was just very creepy thinking that we could have stuff like that hidden in our house. Chances are we didn't, but it was still really scary. After a couple of weeks, my mom was speaking to the wife next door and asked what happened with it all. The wife said that the police found out he would, the handyman, I guess, at nights, come to our street and sit in his car, which had really tinted windows, and watch them on his laptop. When my mom told me this, I got the biggest shivers. The reason was, besides the obvious of a creepy dude sitting in his car watching people through a hidden camera, was because on multiple nights when I had driven home late from my girlfriend's or walked home drunk after a night out, I remember seeing a station wagon always about 30 meters down the street from our house. It was never there during the day, always at night. I'd always walk past it and look at my reflection in the windows, assuming no one was inside. I was always confused by whose car it was, but literally never thought it was anything. It still scares me so much that it was just this creepy fucking plumber sitting back there on a laptop, watching a hidden camera stream of my neighbors. Anyways, that's my story. It's all true, and still creeps me out to this day. But my friends and I have a good laugh about it. So this happened in 2008, right? And that just makes me realize, like, the technology we have now is so much more advanced. You can buy a tiny hidden camera that connects to your phone for like less than $20 and just put it anywhere. And that is another reason why I never stay in Airbnbs. And if I do, I check every little nook and cranny to make sure that there is no chance a little hidden camera can be there. Going off of that story, real quick, here are some ways you can check for hidden cameras. Number one, look for suspicious objects. So, items that are commonly used as hidden cameras are clocks, smoke detectors, wall decor, and USB charging blocks. If it looks suspicious, unplug it. Another way is to completely darken the room you're in and see if there's any light emitting from something that shouldn't be emitting light. Like a lot of hidden cameras have small LED lights that will blink or shine in the dark. Two-way mirrors. Probably a less common used method, but to test the mirror, place the tip of your finger on the surface. If there is a visible gap between the mirror and your finger, it's a real mirror. If it appears that your fingertip and the reflection are touching tip to tip, it might be a two-way mirror and could have a camera or a person behind it. Most smartphone cameras can also detect infrared light that might be emitting from a hidden camera. So just turn off all the lights, open up your smartphone camera, wave it around, see if anything's blinking or odd. There's also hidden camera detector apps and devices, but another simple way is to just open up the Wi-Fi networks that are available around you. A lot of hidden cameras use Wi-Fi. So if you're staying at like an Airbnb or a hotel or something and using the Wi-Fi and something weird pops up like IP camera, then obviously there is a hidden camera nearby. This next story is titled, "Had an incredibly frightening experience last night and wanted to know if anyone here has ever had a similar encounter." So last night, I was at a classmate's house working on a group project we have due tomorrow. I live in an apartment in the town where our university is located, and my classmate lives at his parents' house, which is in the foothills just outside of town. In order to get to the house, you have to drive along a relatively secluded and narrow two-lane road for about 5 to 6 miles. We started working on the project at about 6 p.m., and I ended up hanging around for a while after we had finished our working. So I left his house pretty late at about 11 and started down the road back towards town. I didn't realize how tough it would be to navigate the road at night. There were no streetlights, and the road was unkept and riddled with potholes. On top of this, I had no cell service, so I had to drive very slowly to make sure I didn't blow out one of my tires, since I had used my spare a couple of weeks back. I figured I was about 3 miles from the house when I rounded a tight corner and saw a pickup truck with a camper shell parked diagonally across the road. The manner in which it was parked completely impeded my path, and I couldn't drive around it because there was a gully on both sides of the road. What the hell is a gully? Oh, a gully is a ravine formed by the action of water. The only way for me to go at this point was backwards, where there was a pull-off that I could use to turn my car around. At first, I couldn't see inside the cab, but when I turned on my high beams, I saw that there was a man, slouched over in the driver's seat, his head resting against the steering wheel as if he had been knocked out after a bad accident. I immediately sensed something was wrong. The way his car had just coincidentally come to rest in a position that totally blocked the road was a big red flag for me. I had heard stories of people playing dead in the road as a way to lure unsuspecting people out of their cars so they could rob them. I decided, fuck this shit, and elected to go back to my classmate's house and explain what was going on. I threw the car into reverse and kept my eyes darting back and forth between my rear view and the truck. I looked and saw that I was almost to the pull-off where I could turn around. When I looked back, my heart skipped about 5 beats. The man who had been slouched over in the driver's seat was now walking towards my car at a hurried pace, while a few other men jumped out of the camper shell and started moving towards me as well. I panicked and accelerated backwards into the pull-off, which messed up the undercarriage of my car pretty bad. As I put it into drive, the guy was already at my passenger side door, tugging on the handle, which, thank the Lord, was locked. I only caught a brief glimpse of him, but his face appeared to be scabbed and leathery. Definitely a meth head or some sort of drug abuser. I sped away and didn't slow down at all until I reached the house, constantly checking my rear view to see if they were following. Thankfully, they didn't tail me, and when I reached the house, I explained what had happened to my classmate, and we called the cops. I was grateful that my buddy's parents were kind enough to let me stay the night. They didn't find anyone on the road matching the description, but I filed an incident report, and they told me they would be on the lookout for similar vehicles and suspicious activity. But holy shit, I'm still so shook up over it. I keep getting the same adrenaline rush I got when I saw the guy charging me whenever I think about it. Please share similar experiences you've had, as I would appreciate a good read or a good discussion to help clear my headspace. So another Redditor added their own short little story of their experience. Just last weekend, my husband and I were driving back from my sister's house with our three kids in the back seat. It was dark, and as we have recently moved cities, I plugged our new address into the GPS for help getting home. It took us on some back roads, which isn't a big deal for a country girl like me, but we reached a stretch of nothing, and it was pitch black, no houses or lights around. There was a car that had been driving a little ahead of us for several minutes, and suddenly it started speeding up, slowing down, basically yanking our chain. Then another car pops up behind us and starts tailing us so closely that his headlights disappeared in my mirror. My husband told me to pull over ASAP as both of us had a bad feeling. As soon as we saw a side road, I made an abrupt turn, forcing the car behind me to miss it. Both cars sped off. It was weird and made me feel creeped out for the rest of the ride. Grindr horror story. I live in a small city in Romania, around 30,000 inhabitants. Romania isn't exactly known for their tolerance of gay people. It's not as bad as other places, such as Russia, but the situation is definitely not rosy here either. I get on Grindr and meet a guy, 18 years old apparently. The guy didn't have a picture of his face as his profile picture, because it's too dangerous. He had a picture of a rose drawing. Most guys on Grindr here don't have pictures of themselves. We talk for a bit and I really liked the guy. And then we finally exchange face pictures. I send him a selfie of me and he sends me a picture of a guy from our city. He was cute and I really, really liked him, so I told him, "Hey, I saw you around the city. Didn't know you were gay too." We talk and finally arrange to meet. I had some errands to run at the tailor shop. My cousin's bachelorette party is coming up next week, and I had to adjust my favorite shirt. So I asked him to meet in front of the tailor shop. The building in which the tailor shop is located has 4 stories. The ground floor is a clothes shop, which my aunt works at. The first floor is a storage room. The third floor is a barber's salon. And the 4th floor was the tailor shop. I go to the tailor shop, and then go to the clothes shop on the ground floor to visit my aunt and see how she's doing. As I was looking out the window of the clothes shop, I noticed there were 5 men, all of them in their late 20s behind the building. None of them was the guy I got a picture of, and none of them even looked remotely close to what the guy looked like. I texted the guy I was supposed to meet and asked him if he made it to the tailor shop. As soon as I send the message, one of the 5 guys' phones lit up, and he started texting. As soon as he stopped texting, I got a notification from Grindr. Quote, "I'm behind the tailor shop. I went there to smoke so no one would see me. Come smoke with me." I was terrified as I realized I wasn't going to meet the guy in the picture. He tries to get me to go behind the tailor shop, and I try to get him to the side of it. There were no windows to the side of the building, so after a few tries, he agreed to meet me at the side of the tailor shop. All 5 guys went to the side of the tailor shop. I peeked my head from the door, looked left and right, and as soon as I saw my way was clear, I ran for it. Grindr cutie, let's not meet. Edit. I bumped into the cute guy the next day and started talking to him. I opened my phone and pretended to use it, and I went on Grindr. I saw him look at my screen and ask me, "You're, you know?" I say yes, because I actually knew he was gay too, and he says, "Me too." I told him about the incident, and he got kind of scared as the guys used his picture. On a more positive note, he agreed to go out with me once school starts again. This next story is super long, and I love how vague the title is. OP just titled it, Prettier. When I was in third grade, I made a friend named Nicholas, Nikki for short. We were both on the quieter side compared to our classmates, and we both shared a love for pudding cups. One day at school, Nikki forgot his lunch at home, so I told him he could have my pudding cup. That's how we became friends. From that moment on, we shared my pudding cups every day. The other kids in our class used to tease us, accusing us of having crushes on each other, and chant that horrible, horrible to an 8-year-old at least, K-I-S-S-I-N-G song all the time. It had become customary for Nikki and I to separate ourselves from the other kids at recess and at lunch. We had a big tree we would always meet under in the morning, at recess, and for a few minutes after school, before our parents came to pick us up. Nikki himself lived with his older sister and single mother. He tried explaining the concept of divorce to me once, but in my 8-year-old mind, it didn't make sense that his parents weren't together, happily married. As you can imagine, my parents were married, and my home life was the epitome of adoring nuclear family. Imagine Full House, except with a mother who hadn't passed away, and a couple of cousins instead of uncles. I can't recall a single moment in my childhood where I felt unloved or uncared for in any way. I soon realized that was a rarity. During one of mine and Nikki's morning visits to the tree, as we had cleverly nicknamed it, he invited me to his birthday party. He excitedly unzipped his backpack and withdrew an invitation card made of blue construction paper. There was a hand-drawn tree on the front, two little kids of approximately mine and Nikki's size and coloring, and a home address scribbled inside. To this day, I still have it. When the bell rang, he and I ran inside with the rest of the kids, and I waited all day for him to give out the rest of his birthday invitations, but he never did. I was the only one he had invited. Because the other kids teased us so much, my 8-year-old mind had chalked it up to the conclusion that he didn't want any bullies there, and had therefore invited his only friend, me. Suffice to say, I was flattered and happy. I gave the card to my mother later on in the evening. She smiled and said, "How cute," and very quickly gave me permission to go. It was my first non-family birthday party. The next day I went to the store with my mother and older brother, and we picked out a birthday present for Nikki. He and I were heavily into Transformers, so we got him a tiny transformer, after getting permission from his mother, and I wrapped it up in blue wrapping paper all by myself. His birthday was on the following Saturday. My mother dropped me off at Nikki's house, briefly speaking with his mother in the kitchen, discussing pickup times and how fast they're growing, before kissing me on the forehead goodbye. Because Nikki, his sister, and I were the only ones there, we decided to play a couple of board games, and then tag, when it wasn't raining anymore. We were in the backyard. It got to be a little sunny after, and Nikki and I fell deep into our dramatic reenactment of the latest and most exciting Power Rangers episode to date, that we had seen, at least. His sister, a preteen at the time, went inside for a minute to check something, which Nikki later revealed to me was a code phrase she used when she wanted to talk to the cute neighbor boy on the phone. Inside the kitchen, his mother was cooking and keeping an eye on us through the window. It was only as we went inside to eat that I realized there were no decorations. In fact, there wasn't anything to signify that it was Nikki's birthday at all, except for the homemade chocolate cake. I had loosely gathered that Nikki's family didn't have a lot of money, and that maybe that was the reason he went to school without lunch so often. But I never really asked, and Nikki never really said anything. Not that an 8-year-old would do either of those things. We went down to the basement after we cut the cake and took a couple of photos, where there was a tiny TV and an SNES. We played video games for roughly 10 minutes before there was a loud knock on the door. Nikki stopped the game, Yoshi's Island, and jogged up the basement stairs to answer the door, eventually screaming, "Dad, I thought you said you couldn't come." He was very excited, understandably so, considering how rarely he saw his father, and what a big occasion it was in his life when he did. He would always tell me about it at school, that his cool, fun dad came to visit and took him for a ride around the block on his motorcycle. For a while, I'll admit, I wasn't sure if I believed his dad actually owned a motorcycle. But when Nikki came down to introduce me to his dad, I followed them outside into the front yard and saw a big black Harley parked in the driveway. There were two helmets, one for his dad and one for him. I was instantly jealous. My own father drove a minivan and wore polo shirts and cargo pants almost religiously. Nikki's dad, however, was the complete and total opposite of mine. He wasn't suburban at all. In fact, he looked like a character out of The Outsiders. Right away, I thought he was cool, and right away, I wanted to fit in with them. I should note that Nikki and I came from different ethnic backgrounds. He was white, I was not. Because I went to school with majority white kids and lived in a town with majority white population, I found it very difficult to fit in sometimes. That was a part of the reason I had grown close to Nikki so quickly. He was pretty much the only kid in school who gave me the time of the day, and I, him. The other kids didn't like me because I looked different, and they didn't like Nikki because he wore old, faded clothes. He was raised on a modest salary. His mother had a few jobs, if I remember correctly. She was a waitress, a grocery store clerk, and a part-time janitor. For a single mother with two growing kids, a house, and a car that was always breaking down, she was really quite optimistic. I liked her a lot. She was always nice. Even when she caught one of the bullies in school shoving Nikki to the ground once, she was nice. So when she wasn't nice to Nikki's father, and when she pulled him aside to ask him to leave the party, I couldn't help but wonder why. My mother picked me up soon after, and I made a pact with Nikki that I would come over again very soon. Because my mother had finally met his in person and spoke with her, I was allowed to come over and play now. Before that, she would always tell me, "Not until I meet his mother." From that point on, I went over to Nikki's house 2 or 3 times every week. Sometimes his mother would be there, sometimes his older sister would be there. One of them was always there to look after us and make sure we didn't get up to any trouble. We would usually just go down to his basement and play video games, or, when the weather would allow it, we would ride bikes in the cul-de-sac and jump on his tiny trampoline. He was always better at flips than me, and I kind of resented him for it. One time he tried to teach me how to front flip, and I nearly landed on my head. The second I got to my feet, I ran away and started crying, mostly due to embarrassment. I wanted Nikki to think I could hang, but I couldn't really do any of the cool things he could. My own parents thought trampolines were too dangerous and forbade me from jumping on Nikki's. I used to do it anyway, though. Kids will be kids. Nikki thought I was cool, though, and to get my crybaby ass to feel better, he admitted he was a little jealous of me. He said he was jealous of my new clothes, my new bike, and just everything new that I had. That was the first time he opened up to me about being less privileged. The SNES in his basement was an old gift from a cousin who lived in the next town over, but it barely worked half the time. That was probably why his cousin gave it away. We sat in his basement for a few minutes talking about all the little reasons we were jealous of each other, and then his sister came down to say she was going to the mall with her friends, but that their dad was coming over to look after us. Their mother was at work that afternoon. For whatever reason, Nikki was shocked to hear his dad was coming over. I took it as a surprise visit and ran outside with Nikki when we heard the motorcycle. Indeed, his dad was there, and he also had a late birthday present for Nikki in his hands. It was a box, roughly the size of his head, and it was wrapped in newspaper. When we went inside to open it, he made Nikki promise not to tell his mother what he got him. Apparently, his mother didn't want Nikki to get a present from his dad, but his dad bought him a present anyway. Nikki readily nodded, so I followed his lead. I watched Nikki tear the newspaper to shreds, revealing a brand new Polaroid camera. Nikki had no idea what it was at first, looking to his dad for answers before I excitedly said, "A camera. You got a camera." I could tell Nikki felt embarrassed that he didn't know right away, but he was also just so happy that he got something. He brushed the embarrassment aside, and we opened the box to play with it. His dad taught us how to use it and explained how it worked to us. He pointed it at Nikki and snapped the first photo, flapping it in the air after, and then showing us the final product. It was very cool to me that the photos came out right away. My family had a camera too, but we had to wait for the photos to get developed at a store. By that time, I'd always forget and lose interest. But Nikki's new Polaroid camera printed out photos right away. Nikki loved it, and I loved it, and his dad really seemed to love it too. When his dad pointed the camera at me next, I smiled like a dork, and we all laughed at the photo after. My front teeth were missing, and I looked like I was high, pretty much. Nikki and I traded our photos after. He kept the photo of me, and I kept the photo of him. We said we'd be friends for as long as we kept the photos of each other intact, so I took extra good care of mine. Now that we had a new toy to play with, I was always asking to go over to Nikki's. Because I lived in a house with so many other family members and relatives, I felt lost there sometimes. When I went to Nikki's, I felt more like I belonged, and it was always quieter there too. It was the mid-90s at this time, so parents were less strict with their young children, and mine allowed me to spend hours at Nikki's as long as his mother was okay with it. She always was. She loved having me around because she knew how happy it made Nikki to have a friend to hang out with. My mother would frequently send me to Nikki's house with some sort of dish or snack, and she even invited Nikki's family to my house for dinner once. My family really liked his family, and I think my older brother had a tiny crush on his older sister. But she was all about neighbor boy, so tough luck, bro. For this reason, I was allowed to go to Nikki's house almost every day now. He didn't live too far from my house either. We were within walking distance of each other, maybe 5 blocks away. His house was one of the few places I knew how to get to, apart from my own. There were times when I would go straight to his house with him from school, and times when he would come over to play with me at mine. The latter happened rarely as we both preferred his house. Mine was just way too crowded. One day at school, Nikki told me his dad had come over the other night and got mad at him for not taking any new photos with the Polaroid he got for his birthday. Both Nikki and I loved the Polaroid, and we thought it was very cool the first few times we played around with it, but as most kids do, we eventually lost interest in it, and Nikki sort of just tucked it under a blanket in the basement and forgot about it. I guess his dad didn't like that very much. So Nikki asked me if I'd help him to take photos for the next time his dad comes to visit. In fact, he said his dad specifically requested that I be in the photos. I found this perfectly normal as an 8-year-old. I figured Nikki's dad wanted us to have fun with the camera and immortalize our friendship, make a scrapbook or something. Up until this point, Nikki's mother and sister still had no idea he even had a camera. I agreed I would come over soon and we would take a bunch of silly photos, but Nikki forgot to mention one thing to me. He forgot to mention that his dad would be there. It was the same story as last time. His mother was working. His sister was at the mall with friends, presumably with money their dad gave her, and their mother had no idea any of this was going on. I went over there after school and I noticed the motorcycle parked out front. Nikki didn't seem surprised to see it, but something about his mood was off that day. I figured it was because he got in trouble the last time he saw his dad. Because it was raining a little, we went inside to hang out in the basement, where I thought we would play on the SNES for a bit. But that wasn't the plan at all. Nikki's dad was in the basement. He greeted me with a big smile and asked us how school was, if we did anything fun at recess, what kind of things we learned in class, the usual. I thought nothing of it, as my parents would always ask me similar questions. Eventually, Nikki's dad said we would start taking photos, so I obliged. I smiled widely for the camera, But instead of pressing the button and laughing at the photo, like we had done the other day, Nikki's dad tutted at me and said I should try to look prettier. I had no idea what he meant by prettier, so I just smiled a little smaller and held it for a second before he corrected me again. As you can imagine, he kept at it, nitpicking at me until I let my hair down, telling me to pinch my cheeks before every photo to make sure they were flushed, rosy, and pretty. This whole time, he hadn't taken a single photo of Nikki. Because it's been decades and because I've somehow managed to block most of this out, I'm not entirely sure what led up to it, but Nikki's dad eventually convinced me to start taking articles of clothing off. First my jacket, then my socks, and then my cardigan. And then he asked Nikki to get in the frame. This whole time, Nikki had been standing off to the side, not saying a word, and not looking at me either. It was like he felt something was wrong, but he was too afraid to say it. What ended up happening is exactly what you think. First, Nikki was told to hold my hands, then hug me, then put his face really close to mine, and then he was told to kiss me on the mouth. His dad snapped photos of it every step of the way, asking Nikki questions like, "Isn't she pretty? Don't you think she's pretty, Nick? Do you want to take her on dates?" It was a whole lot of that and a whole lot of touching. The whole time I stood completely still, not really sure of what was going on. Had any other boy been there with me, I'm not sure I would have remained so calm. Because it was Nikki, I felt somewhat safe. I didn't feel like we were doing anything wrong. The kiss was gross to me, but everything else I was mostly okay with. We stopped pretty quickly after the kiss, not because his dad wanted to, but because I had to go home. My mother came to pick me up. Usually my brother would, so he could talk to Nikki's sister a little bit, but he had basketball practice that day, so my mother came instead. For some reason, Nikki's dad didn't go up to answer the door. He asked Nikki to do it, and I took a second to grab my jacket and sweater and put them on. During this time, while Nikki's dad and I were alone in the basement, he said he would come back to take more photos one day, and that I should wear makeup next time. I didn't have any at 8 years old, but I didn't tell him that. I just collected my things and got out of there to go home. I saw my mother at the door and she hugged me, asking how my day was. And suddenly, everything was normal again. For me, anyway. I glanced back to wave bye to Nikki, but he had already closed the door. The next day at school, he completely ignored me. I went to the tree and waited there all morning and all recess, and for an extra 15 minutes after school, but he wasn't there. I saw him in class, so I knew he was at school. He just didn't want to hang out with me for some reason. This carried on for the rest of the week, until one day my mother got a call from Nikki's mother. I was in the living room watching wrestling with my brother, and I vividly remember my mother's smile vanishing as she listened on the phone to whatever Nikki's mother was saying. I remember asking what was wrong, if Nikki was sick, but my mother didn't say anything to me. She just nodded and listened and nodded and listened, face draining of color as though she had seen a ghost. Later, she asked to speak with me in my bedroom and asked me very clearly, "Sweetie, who was there at Nikki's house the other day? Was it his sister Angela or someone else?" As soon as I said, "someone else," her eyes became watery and she asked what happened. I was vague on the details because I wasn't really sure what had happened myself. It was such a blur to me at the time. The only thing I was worried about was Nikki and why he had been ignoring me. Because I didn't want him to be more mad at me and ignore me for longer. I kept quiet about the camera, just saying that Nikki's dad watched us play and told me I was pretty. The last part was apparently enough to set off a huge red flag in my mother's mind. She gave me another hug, told me she wasn't mad at me, and that everything would be okay really soon. So this is what happened. Apparently Nikki's mother had found the camera, asked Angela about it, and then Nikki, quickly learning that their dad had been coming over without her knowledge. The rule was he could only visit when she was home, but the past few times, she wasn't. The next day, I found Nikki under the tree at school, and he very seriously told me we couldn't be friends anymore. I asked why, and he said, just because. He went so far as to giving me back the Polaroid of me smiling like a dork, the one I had exchanged for the Polaroid of him, both of them signifying our friendship. Because nothing had really happened, because the world was a different place 20 years ago, and because the photos weren't explicit in nature, nothing happened to Nikki's dad. But that's not for lack of trying on our mother's parts. I remember going to the police station, telling them everything with my mother there beside me, and repeating the story again to various lawyers. But the most we were able to accomplish was preventing Nikki's dad from seeing Nikki and Angela. Apparently, by coming to the house when Nikki's mother wasn't there, he had violated the terms of their custody agreement. When it was all over, the meetings and everything else, Nikki and his family ended up moving. Apparently, Nikki knew this was going to happen, and that's why he told me we couldn't be friends anymore. I want to say I managed to give him the photo back before he left, and that we shared a pudding cup one last time, but I can't, because those things never happened. He moved and I stayed, and for a really, really long time, I sat alone at the tree during recess. Eventually, I made new friends. Eventually, I stopped waiting for him to move back. And eventually, I was a happy kid again. But I have never, not once in my life, forgotten about Nikki, or what happened in his basement that day, the way everything about him changed so drastically. If it weren't for his dad, I'd like to think we could have remained friends, at least through childhood. The silver lining is social media exists, and when I was 17, I found a friend request from a boy named Nikki in my notifications. Nikki's dad, let's not meet. Ever, ever again. So, OP posted a part 2 and 3 in a different sub, and I was going to read it, but they are both just as long as part 1, and it kind of goes away from the let's not meet creepy encounter stuff. If any of y'all want to read through it, I'm going to link it down below. And if you want to know more about this person's life, especially because OP is a really good writer, I highly suggest you read the rest. Spoiler alert, if you want to know if OP and Nikki ever meet again, yes, they do. And they're apparently in a relationship. So good for them. Next week will probably be part 2 of the P. Diddy lawsuits, but if that's not ready yet, more Let's Not Meet stories. Alrighty, thanks for tuning in, and I hope you all have a good day or night. Goodbye.